I want us today to talk about counting the cost. Pick up your pew Bible if you would, or pick up your own Bible, and let's look at Luke chapter 14. We're going to focus on the middle part of this chapter, but this whole chapter has to do with us recognizing the value of the things that we have. You and I need to appreciate the opportunity we have to serve the God that we serve, who's loved us the way that He's loved us, and then we ought to be willing to make whatever sacrifice He asks of us. You know, as you look at the text, Jesus spoke His words so very plainly. There's no doubt at all in understanding what Jesus meant, except some of those times when He'd speak in parables. Sometimes it would not immediately dawn on individuals what He was talking about, and when all of a sudden these parables dawned on the ones that were involved in the parable, it was a shock to them. Jesus was really talking to them about their lives, and Jesus did talk very, very plainly. In fact, the words of Jesus often offended people. And I've got the word offended in quotation marks on the screen because that's not the proper use of the word, but that conveys what I'm trying to say, and that is it upset people. When you begin to talk plainly to individuals, it really, really begins to upset. Let me see if I can illustrate. In the first several verses of this chapter, He taught a parable to some individuals to try to help them understand some matters, particularly starting down about verse 15. Got your Bible open? Luke 14, verse 15. He was sitting at a table, and there are those who are sitting with Him, and a man says, "Blessed are those who are invited to eat bread in the kingdom of God." And that gives an opportunity for Jesus to tell this parable of this man who made this wedding feast. And he had everything ready, and when the time came for the wedding to take place, he sends out his servants. That's in verse 17. He sends out his servants, and they go and tell everybody it's time to start. They'd already been invited ahead of time, but now it's time for the wedding to start, and they cannot come. There is that individual who has bought some property, and another one who's bought some oxen, and another one who's married. And so here's this wedding feast that's been prepared, and some chose not to come to the wedding feast. They chose their properties, they chose their possessions, the land, they chose their wives, they chose their oxen. I'd rather have my oxen as to come to this wedding feast. Now you've got to get the setting in which this is. The setting is a man has just said, "Blessed are those who are able to eat bread in the kingdom of God." And Jesus said, "Let me tell you a story." And the story is of this great wedding feast, and it was prepared by a certain man, and all of a sudden nobody wants to come to the wedding. And so those who were invited did not want to come, and so he sends them out again, and he says this time, verse 23, "Forget about those who were invited. Go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come that my house may be filled." And then he makes this statement, "I say to you that some of those men who were invited, that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper." This is one of those parables that's not explained. You understand it? There were some individuals that really, to use the word, they didn't recognize the value of the things that they had. What a great thing they would have. But he said, "Listen, I want to tell you something that none of those that were invited are going to be able to come." We could talk longer about the application of it, but the whole principle is we need to value and cherish the things that we have. And then the words that were read in our text, he talks about a man who is going to build a tower. That's in verse 28. "Which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he's laid the foundations, not able to finish it, all who see it will begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish it.'" What we're talking about. This whole chapter has to do with counting the cost. And here's a man that wanted the tower. He thought he wanted the tower, but instead of making all the preparations that he needed to make, he became the source of, the object of ridicule. Well, look how foolish this man was. He didn't even have enough money to build this tower. And then he describes the foolish king going to war. That's in verse 31. And he goes out, and lo and behold, he finds that the other king that is coming against him has an army that's far larger than him. It's 10,000 against 20,000. And what does he do? He has to compromise. He didn't count the cost. He didn't say, here's the value that I will gain from this. Or maybe I didn't make enough preparation. Maybe it wasn't worth it all. Counting the cost. And then Jesus says that you need to understand, verse 26, if you're going to come to me, you've got to count the cost. You see, things have value, do they not? And everything has a relative value, doesn't it not? I mean, you stop and think about it. Everything has a relative value. If I use the word instant gratification, do you understand what I'm talking about? Now, young people, I don't have to tell you this. You understand it. It's your life. The world has changed from the world of your grandparents or great-grandparents. Many of them came out of the Depression, and they wouldn't spend any money at all. I mean, everything. But the mindset of so many, and it's not just of our teens, but it is a characteristic almost of our society, is I got to have instant gratification. It's that same kind of thing where there's impulse buying. You know, whenever people will sit up all night to be the first to get in the store. What is that? Is that the Friday after Thanksgiving? Is that when it is? And they will rush in and trample over people to buy something, and they don't even want it. I don't understand that aspect of it. What'd you get? Well, I wasn't able to get what I wanted, but let me tell you what I got. Haven't counted the cost. Lost all of that sleep and expended all that energy, and you got home and didn't even like what you got. What about this folly of wasted purchases? You know, I think I really want one of these, and this is not impulse buying. You think it through, and then after you get it, you do all the research, and you get that car home, and you think, that's really not the car that I wanted. You know, you do all the research, and it's not really what you wanted. Foolish choices, counting the value of things. How much is your house worth? How much is your car worth? And I'm not asking for numerical value, but what's it really worth? See if I can illustrate. You're at work, and the phone rings, and it's your neighbor that says, your house is on fire. And your wife is home by herself, and that little pet dog that you've had for 14 years is there, and you're worried sick about that pet dog. You're worried about your wife. What's that house worth? Not a thing. Gary will remember the time when he and Jonathan were going to one of the youth activities, and I was in a meeting up at Stewart, and I got a phone call that says, Dad, we've had a wreck. And you know what was the first thing I did not ask? Is the car damaged? That might have come a little bit later, but the first thing that I ask is, are you hurt? You know how little that car is worth at a time like that? And yet we place so much value on these things. And then we illustrate this with the thing that comes out of history, and that is the value of money when dying. This was several years ago, before you teens were actually born, but there was an airplane that crashed down in the Andes that was loaded with money. And they're freezing to death in the Andes. You remember this, the older folks? I'm not making this up. This is not one of those Texas preacher stories. I want you to know it really, really happened. And you know what they did up in the Andes with all of that money? They built a fire out of it. Every value that you have is relative. Now let me just see if we can illustrate. Let's look at some things that that may or may not have value, and let's talk about them. Would you be willing to sacrifice your house? We've already mentioned that. What about not just the matter of that? What about recreation? How important is recreation in your life? How important is, you know, just what you do in your spare time, whether it's shopping or whatever it is? How important is that in your life? What about your parents in your family? How important are they in your life? What about vacation plans? Are there vacation plans that you have, something you're going to do this summer? What's the relative worth of that? Or what about, how does that compare to your children and your wife? Are they a part of that vacation plan? I mean, you look at, what I'm trying to say is that we have all of these things in our lives. What about your job? Would you give your job up in a hurry? You know, how do you feel about that? Where in your life, where does your job fit? Or what about your friends? How do they relate to all of these other things that are on the board? And then what about your health? And then ultimately, what about your life? Which of these would you give up? Look at this list, and how would you rank these things in value? What's number one? Of all the things that's on this list, how would you rank, what would you put at the top of your list? And this is rather arbitrary, and I may have even changed my mind after I ranked all of this in the order in which I've got them here. But would you not put your wife and your children at the top of that list if you have a wife and children? Of all the things that are on this list, would that not be the last thing you'd be willing to give up? Well, I believe that's right. And very, very close to that, and this is more especially to those who are not married, what about your families? What about your brothers and your sisters and your parents? How important are they in your life? You know, you get a phone call, and it's a phone call about your father's in the hospital. How does that touch your life to get a message like that? What's the relative value of that compared to, well, I was at work when I got the phone call, and or I was doing this, or, you know, and all of a sudden, relative values. What about your life? And I almost put life at the top of this because of what the devil said when he was talking to the Lord about Job. He said, a man will give up everything for his life. But I believe we'd give up our lives to save the life of our parents and our family members, and for sure our wife and our children. Is that not right? If your child needed a heart transplant or is going to die, and your heart was compatible and it would function in the heart of that child, would you give up your life for your children? And teens, I want you to know that one of your parents is shaking their head no right now. I'm joking. Yeah, my life's not the top of that list. But somewhere in that list is health, is it not? Having good health. You know, you wouldn't put some of these other things on this list and be detrimental to your health. And all of a sudden it gets a little bit fuzzy right in here when we begin talking about the matter of your friends and your job and your houses and your recreation and your vacation. You want to make your own list? What's important in your life? That's really what this lesson is all about, counting the cost. And that's what Luke chapter 14 is all about. Jesus said, look, there was this wedding feast, and the application obviously is the invitation to come and sit at the table in the Lord's kingdom. That's obvious, the application in Luke chapter 14. Whenever the man says, blessed is that man who is able to sit at your table in the kingdom, And Jesus said, well, wait a minute, these people were invited and they didn't want to come, and so we had to go out and invite others. And then he says, but none of those who were invited are going to even be able to sit at my table. Sitting at the table of the Lord has some real, real worth. How on earth are you going to rank these things? It's really, how does Jesus rank them? How does Jesus rank them? We go back to the list that we've just made and ask the question, how does Jesus rank these things? Now, keep in mind, there is that verse that says, seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. You see, the one thing we did not put on that list is the church. And so I want to ask you, where's the spiritual side of your life rank in your life? You know, there's a way that we can play church. When I was a child, we played church a lot. We would come together and we would have preaching and singing, and we'd even imaginarily baptize people. Me and my sister and my cousin, we'd play church a lot. Then all of a sudden somebody would say, hey, there's a big softball game going over here, you know, three houses down. Forget church. Let's go play softball. Our mama would say, I've just made some homemade ice cream and it's time to eat it. What I'm trying to say is it possible that in this list of things that are there that are of value to us, that we may have overlooked something, and that's the thing that's at the bottom of the screen, and that is his kingdom and his righteousness? You want the Lord to rank these? Wow. Look at verse 24 and 26 and verse 33. Jesus said, a great multitude went with him, and he turned and he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And then skipping down to verse 33, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciples. That's pretty plain. I know how the Bible talks about the love we ought to have for parents and for our mothers and fathers, for our children, for our brothers and our sisters. I know how the Lord talks about the importance of many of the things that are on this screen. And yet Jesus uses an unbelievably strong word in contrast, and that is, if he loves these things more than me, the implication is he really doesn't love me that much. And that's why he uses the word hate. The love that the Lord expects me and you to have is greater than the love, is so much greater than the love for all of these valuable things on our life that's on the left side of the screen. Family and brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and children and wives and husbands. And Jesus said, the love that you have for the spiritual things in your life must supersede all of this. Can we illustrate this? Look back in chapter 12. In chapter 12, Jesus discusses this very same thing. They ought not to move verses around in the Bible like that. I didn't have it written down on the screen. Well, look in Matthew 10. The parallels in Matthew 10. We'll find it in Matthew 10, maybe get back. Look at Matthew chapter 10, verse 34. Matthew 10, 34, Jesus says, "Do not think that I came to bring peace on this earth." That's remarkable, isn't it? Peace on earth and goodwill toward men. That was what was said at his birth. And the whole view is that if everybody loved Jesus, there'd be nothing but peace on this earth. And Jesus, very plainly, in a way that may offend some, Jesus said, "Do not think that I've come to bring peace on this earth. I have not come. I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemy shall be those of his own house." Do you understand what Jesus is saying? That as a result of him being on this earth and teaching people to love him, that the time may come in which his own family may turn against him. That is remarkable in this statement. Now go back to Luke chapter 12. It's in verse 49. Jesus says it perhaps even plainer in Luke chapter 12 and verse 49 whenever he says, "I came to send fire on this earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how I am destroyed. Do you suppose that I'm come to give peace to the earth?" That's in verse 51. "I tell you, not at all. I've come to bring division. For from now on, five in one house will be divided, three against two, and two against three. Father will be divided against son, and son against father, mother against daughter, daughter against mother, mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." Look at what he says. In a house is going to be turmoil. Why? Because Jesus is on this earth. How on earth could that be? Because in those houses, there are those who want to live right and those who don't have any desire at all to live right. Some of you understand this. You've got to understand that this very kind of thing was the thing that was transpiring in that first century world in such a remarkable way that all of these things were happening. And when they became Christians, is it not true that sometimes, as it was in the early world, sometimes whenever people become Christians, those who are of other religions, Judaism, Muslim religion, will act as though that child had never been born. Because that child committed heinous crime and went out and did all sorts of wretched things. Oh no, because that child made a decision to live right. I think of a 14-year-old girl in New Zealand who wanted to be baptized, wanted to become a Christian. Her parents were not religious. Oh, they had an official church home, but they never went to it. And all of a sudden, here's this young lady that says, "I'm ready to commit my life to the Lord." And when she verbalized such to her parents forbade her, "No, you cannot do that." I love the faith of young people. You guys don't know how much I love and admire the faith that you have. In the midst of all of the pressures that are on you, pressures that I didn't face when I was a teen, you're still steadfast. And so the time came for her summer vacation, and she went 65 miles away to another city to visit her grandparents. And she found the church in Tauranga, New Zealand. And she went and asked the church over there to baptize her into the body of Jesus. It's rather ironic. You cannot unbaptize somebody. She came back home. And now she's ready to serve God and live faithfully to God. Her parents did everything they could to destroy her faith. They planned weekend vacations away. They planned weekend trips. They offered her money to not come to worship God. All of a sudden, it's not like she's gone out and has become immoral and ungodly and involved in all sorts of addiction and bringing shame and ungodly reproach upon that family. Here's a young lady that just wants to live right. Think not that I've come to bring peace on this earth. Do you know what this means? It means that when those times come in your life in which those that mean the most to you, those that you would put at the top of your list, the most important things in your life, wife and children and parents and all of the things that are on this list, Jesus said, you've got to love me more than that, and the result of my coming in this world will make you count the cost and force you to make a decision. Years ago, there was a 15-year-old young lady who back in her day, back in the 20s or 30s, back in that period of time, married and went and lived with her new husband's parents. And they treated her like she was a slave, almost a house girl. It's the Cinderella concept of you scrub the floor, you're the one that does all the nasty work in the house. For several years, they lived with his parents. And then the time came whenever they were able to get their own house. She's no longer a young lady. She has children. She's a rather young mother. If you marry at 15, you're a rather young mother. And the church was having a gospel meeting. And she went and was dressing at that nighttime service, or getting ready to go to that nighttime service, and her overbearing husband came in and said, where on earth do you think you're going? And she says, they're having the gospel meeting down at the church. I'm going down there to worship God. I was not raised to be away from God, and now that we're living on my own, our own, I want you to know I'm going to serve God. And he said, if you go to church, I'm going to spank all of the children. And he called in the oldest child, a daughter, and said, go out and get the switches. Get several switches. One, I may use more than one on every one of the kids. And if your mama walks out of this house, I'm going to beat the kids tonight. What are you going to do? She went to church. When she came home, he had locked the door, did not want her to come back into the house, would not answer from within. And as she told me the story, she said, I thought he might have killed the kids. He was just that mean. She finally had to threaten to get the sheriff out to get her inside the house, and he let her in. That woman was my grandmother. And I stand here today because there was a woman who was more determined to live right than anything on this earth. Can I tell you the rest of the story? The children were grown now. Many years have passed. And there's a gospel meeting, and she's going to that gospel meeting, and she, lo and behold, she looks over, and he, a grandfather who I never knew, who died before I came onto the scene, is getting dressed. And she said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to church with you tonight." They walked to church that night. Well, that old building, no air conditioning, had the windows up. And he stood outside like men often did in those old wooden frame buildings. Some of you may have remembrance of that. And when the invitation song was sung, he walked down the aisle and said, "I want to be a Christian. I want to be baptized." And Mama said, "Dan, he'd been so evil and so mean for so long that I really thought on the way home he'd start laughing and say, 'I really made fools of them tonight, didn't I?'" They went home without saying a word. And when they got in bed, Mama said, he reached over and pulled me over against beside him and hugged me and prayed the sweetest prayer I'd ever heard in my life. Folks, count the cost. And any time these things get in our way, count the cost. I want to tell you something. And I don't want you to ever, ever forget it. It's always right to do right. And it's always wrong to do wrong. It's never right to do wrong, and it's never wrong to do right. And that's right. Because the Bible is right. And so today, and the rest of the days of your life, you're going to be faced with decisions. And hear Jesus say, these things that are on the left of the screen can never take precedence over that which is right. You need to be a Christian. You need to count the cost. You need to believe in Jesus with all of your heart, and you need to make a decision. That's what repentance is. It is a decision that I make today that I am going to live right. I'm thankful. I'm thankful that Arthur Bates will be in heaven with Dora Bates. I'm thankful for my grandmother Dora, who kept living right, and the influence was such it led her husband to be able to become a Christian. If you're not a Christian, count the cost. Things that are seen are temporal, and there is that which is eternal, and that is your soul. And that soul can be saved if you'll make up your mind today and walk down these aisles and let us baptize you. If you'll confess you believe Jesus is the Son of God, you can be baptized this very day. And the Lord will wash away every sin you've ever committed. And then He says, you be full of faith. Faith full. Revelation 2 and verse 10. And I'll give you the crown of life. How can this church help you go to heaven? If we can help you in any way, won't you let it be known by coming to the front right now as together we stand and sing. Will you come?